Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies, if your boyfriend isn't listening to B-Spec, Brian Spector, then reach over, grab his knob, and turn it up.
We ready.
Football fans, it's that time for the NFL Spectacular with B-Spec, Brian Spector.
You know Big Papi.
If you want to get in on the show, then dial 347-945-6275. Or, for all you computer nerds, you can go online at NFLDraftBible.com.
Spector always delivers what he promises.
He's your resident football expert.
Are you serious? Malin couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat.
He's the king of the combine.
The guy runs the 40-yard dash in 4 forever.
He's the voice of the angry fan.
If that happens, I might as well go hang myself with wax dental floss.
He's B-Spec, Brian Spector.
Yes! Yes! Oh, yeah!
I'm absolutely, without a doubt, a true believer.
And he's on right now on the All Access Football Network.
Shut your pie hole! We're working here!
Let's get ready to rumble!
That's right, we're working here.
Ladies.
Here, another edition of the NFL Spectacular here on All Access Football Radio. I'm B-Spec, Brian Spector, joining you on another Tuesday here on the show. You want to get in, 347-945-6275 is the call-in number. We'll take your calls. NFL Draft, folks, getting closer. Detroit Lions, they're taking Matt Stafford. They are definitely taking Matt Stafford. Although, the St. Louis Rams, they're taking offers. They're listening. Might want to trade the second overall pick. I don't blame them. Remember, folks, tough economic times for everybody. I don't necessarily believe that the NFL teams are struggling as much as they portray themselves to be struggling. Nobody wants to pay $50 million to an unproven player. St. Louis Rams shopping the pick. Will anybody trade up the number 2 overall pick? I can guarantee you nobody's going to trade up the number 1 pick. I don't know. It'll be very interesting to see what happens. Will anybody move up that second pick with the St. Louis Rams? Maybe to get Jason Smith from Baylor? I don't think so. Rams need help on the offensive line. No one's going to trade up to take that financial burden of the number 2 overall pick. The Rams will stay pat at number 2. They will draft Jason Baylor. I'm on a roll today. Jason Smith from Baylor. 347-945-6275. If you want to get in on the show, great show for you today. We will go on the clock with the Miami Dolphins. Omar Kelly from the South Florida Sun Sentinel will join us. He will talk about the Dolphins' amazing first year under Tony Sperano, Bill Parcells, Jeff Ireland. Now year 2 of what we're still calling the rebuilding process. What will they do in the draft? We'll talk about their free agent moves, players they've lost, players they've re-signed, guys they're going to target in the draft. Also at 5:15, friend of mine, Asher Allen, defensive back from Georgia, will join us. You will hear his name called in a couple weeks in the NFL draft. You will hear his name called early in the draft. We'll talk to Asher, get his thoughts on what's going on. A lot of other news around the NFL, folks. Plaxico Burress in trouble with the law again. This is outside of the gun issue. He cursed out a police officer in Florida during a recent traffic stop, telling the cop he was going to be in trouble because Burress knew the sheriff personally. Folks, the sheriff down here is Al Lamberti. When asked if he knew Plaxico Burress, he said, who? Plaxico Burress needs to put his foot in his mouth, please. He's personal friends with Al Lamberti, the sheriff. The sheriff didn't know who the hell he was. Burris faces a possible 3.5-year prison sentence on a gun charge, replied to each of the officer's questions and commands with an expletive you during the stop. Just another idiot. A guy that does not get it. Broward County Deputy Sheriff Donald Harris pulled Burris over around 10:30 a.m. on March 18th for speeding on I-95 near Fort Lauderdale. Harris opened the door of Burris' black 2008 Toyota Sequoia when the officer couldn't see inside the player's SUV. Expletive you, Burris said. You can't open my expletive door. Burris, who the police report said was driving like he was going to kill somebody, was issued a $150 speeding citation, his fifth traffic ticket in the state of Florida in the past month. Why does he still have a license? Could somebody explain to me why Plaxico Burris still has a license? Why he's not in jail already? According to the police, a violent and aggressive Burris, 31 years old, was asked to get out of his car to be checked for weapons. I don't know. I don't know if you want to check to see. He probably has a lot of weapons in that car. Can you imagine being a police officer asking Burris to step out of the car and you're going through his car? What'll happen? Oh, that's just not right. You're going to hear about this by the end of your shift, said Burris, who has a house in South Florida, as he returned to his car. Burris also received tickets for going 60 miles an hour in a 45-mile-an-hour zone, improper tags, improper lane change, and improper window tinting on March 1st. His gun possession case was adjourned last Tuesday until June 15th. Can somebody please explain this to me? Why these guys still have a license? Why they're driving? And with all the stuff that's surrounding them, legal troubles, why they go and pose threats? I don't give a crap who you are. I don't care who you play for. Right now, buddy, you're not playing for anybody. Will anybody take a shot on Plaxico Burris? If you have a favorite team, would you want your team to sign Plaxico Burris? He's a great player on the field, but off the field, he's just a complete moron. Imagine the PR hit your team is going to take. When you sign guys like Plaxico Burris or you sign other players of that kind of magnitude as well. Bill Parcells didn't want to deal with T.O. in Dallas. But Jerry Jones controls the roots there. If I'm a PR guy, I don't want anything to do with these guys on my team. But think about it, folks. If you're a team like the Chicago Bears, you have Devin Hester, you got Matt Forte, Adrian Peterson, the smaller version of Adrian Peterson, in the backfield, a tight end like Greg Olsen, would you take a flyer on Plaxico Burris? Could you imagine Jay Cutler throwing to Plaxico Burris? I don't know. The New York Giants weren't the same team offensively when Plax wasn't in the lineup. I'm just going to call it like I see it. That would be pretty intriguing to see a guy like Plaxico Burris though playing in the Windy City in Chicago. It's a big market. Another big media market. And they will tear into Plax just like they did in New York if he doesn't conduct himself like a good citizen. And he's never going to conduct himself like a good citizen. Same thing with Terrell Owens. He'll be a good citizen the first 6 weeks in Buffalo. Then when they start 2-4, 2-5, 3-5, 3-6, whatever it is, and they're way out of the race in the AFC East, T.O. will start whining and bitching and blaming everything on Trent Edwards. Oh, Trent Edwards can't get me the ball. Too many balls are getting thrown to Lee Evans. These players never change. They're not going to change. They are what they are. Michael Vick, another bonehead. How could you be Michael Vick and you go up to a judge and say, well, Mr. Judge, I don't want you to look at me and think I'm full of crap, but I think I'm going to make $10 million as soon as I get out of jail. Are you serious? Mike, I don't know what drugs you're doing, But it's got to be some strong stuff. If you think an NFL team is going to give you $10 million as soon as you get out of jail, granted he'll be 29 years old, he's one of the best athletes I've ever seen in the sport in this time. Michael Vick, you need to have your head examined if you think you're getting $10 million. Because first off, you have to be reinstated by Commissioner Goodell. There's no guarantee that Commissioner Goodell is going to reinstate you as soon as you get out of jail anyway. Do all these NFL teams really trust that Michael Vick is a changed man? What about the PR hit you're going to take from PETA and all these animal rights organizations? I'm going to go out on a limb right now and say Michael Vick won't play in the NFL at all this year. Maybe he'll get $100,000 to go play in Canada. Maybe the UFL, Dennis Green, Jim Fossil, Jim Haslett, Ted Cottrell. Maybe they'll take a shot at you. Got to get the league some PR. That's a possibility. Ricky Williams played in the CFL after the drug charges and everything on that basis. But I don't think Michael Vick's going to play in the NFL at all this year. Why should he? And if the team is going to sign him in the NFL, he's going to get a minimum contract, a lot of incentives. They're going to have to go out, be a good boy, do a lot of charity work, be involved, and show that you care about the world and you want to revive your career. $10 million? You got to be completely insane.
Everywhere I go, all around the world, people still support Mike Vick. So regardless of what I go through, people are going to love me, man.
I don't know about that. What are your thoughts, folks? Would you take a shot on Michael Vick? Would you want him on your team?
Michael Vick was the reason I got it wrong.
Yeah, that's what they're all saying right now. I've got one word for Michael Vick. Well, I got a few words for Michael Vick, as a matter of fact.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
I don't think he does, period. 347-945-6275 if you want to get in on the show. B-Spec, Brian Spector with you, taking you until 6 o'clock. Another edition of the NFL Spectacular here on NFL All Access Football Radio. Asher Allen, cornerback out of Georgia, should be giving us a call momentarily. We'll talk to Asher, find out what he expects going to the next level. Asher's a guy, he's going to get picked early in the draft. He is going to be an asset to an NFL team. And we'll get his thoughts on where he thinks he's going to go, what team he might want to play for. Ask him some draft questions on the combine, maybe some funny stories he'll have for us. We'll also ask Asher, what was it like playing with Matt Stafford? All the hype that surrounds him. Does he think his own guy, Matt Stafford, is the number one pick in the NFL? Be interesting to get his thoughts on that. What do you want your team to do in the NFL, folks, with the draft? You want your team to get defense, offense, any players you like, any players you're curious about, give us a call, 347-945-6275. We'll talk to our guests. Your calls will steer us all the way up until the top of the hour. We'll go on the clock with the Miami Dolphins at 5:35 with Omar Kelly from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. That's right. We'll go around the clock. Jeff Garcia signs with the Raiders. If you want to lose, just go to Oakland. I know some guys have trouble letting go. They want to play the game. There are guys that still want to play in their 50s. But why the hell would you go to Oakland if you're Jeff Garcia? You've made tons of money. He's married to a Playboy bunny, an ex-Playboy bunny, or maybe she still is. Somebody can call me here on the show and fill me in. I don't remember. Why would would you want to play for Al Davis? I don't get it at all. I don't see why anybody would want to play for Al Davis. That's just absolutely ridiculous. I don't get it at all. I really do not get it at all. Let's talk a little NFL. We got a special guest joining us on the line. You're on the edge?
Yeah, I'm here. Hello? Hello?
You hear me?
Yeah, I'm here.
What's going on, buddy?
Going good, man. Going good. I hear you talking, man.
Hey, man. I'm hearing you talking too. How you feeling? How are workouts?
Oh, everything's going good, man. Just chilling, man. Just keeping the body right, body tight. That's about it, man. Just waiting for the draft, man.
Now, Asher, you and I go back now, okay? And I've been asking people this, and you and I have not discussed this. Who did you have in your NCAA bracket? Because I got killed in mine.
How did I do in mine?
Yeah, how'd you do in yours?
Oh, well, I had North Carolina. I'm not one of those guys who's going to make it up at the end and say, at the end when North Carolina wins, they say they had him. Yeah, I like my boy Hainsborough, man. I really like him. I like how he plays, man. It may not be pretty. You know, he may have a lot of haters out there because, you know, the way he plays, but he puts the points up. That's all that matters. At the end of the day, he's going to put his points up. He's going to hustle out there. He's going to make everybody else do good. Lawson had a really good tournament, too. And I think they really, once the tournament came on, man, they really proved why, you know, they're one of the best teams perennial every year. So everything went good. Had some shockers in there, you know. But everything went good for the most part.
Bro, I had Memphis. I was done weeks ago. So you can make fun of me now. You can make fun of me every other day we talk. It's the rest of my life.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, I don't think they did as good as they wanted, but guess what? They usually do good all the time, and now that the head coach left, and now he's over at Kentucky, so he's joined the SEC. So at least, you know, something good came out of it, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. It just didn't do me well in my wallet, my friend.
Oh, man. Well, see, you got to do the free one, man. You can't lose, you can't win. Only thing you lose is pride. But now you lost a little bit more, but that's how I expect. You're good, baby.
Brother, I'm with you, and you know what? Speaking of pride, you are a guy that has a lot of pride. And again, folks, we're joined by Georgia defensive back Asher Allen here on the NFL Spectacular All Access Football Radio Sports Line. And Asher, my friend, let's talk about the experience of the NFL Combine. I know we spoke at the Combine and we speak pretty much every other day after that as well. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, it was great, Spec. It was great to be around so much talent, around so many, you know, guys out there that, you know, have you know, put so much hours and so much, you know, blood, sweat, and tears for their respective universities, and show them and see them out there and just talk to them, converse with them, and just, you know, just see how much, you know, football has evolved over the years. And just to really, I just enjoy just being around people who are very talented and competing against them. I'm a big-time competitor, and I really enjoyed it. Also enjoyed talking with different coaches there, and having a chance to really show myself, show my personality, show how I talk, how I can, my IQ for the game, how I articulate things, and really get a chance for teams to, you know, kind of put a face, so to say, with the film and what they're watching and things like that. I had a chance to do that, and it was great. The experience was great, and really, you know, looking forward to the draft. So
now, are the nerves settling in? I mean, I know we talked about this a while back too, but do these nerves settle in as it gets closer? You sit there and wonder, all right, I spoke to all these teams. These guys like me. I know a lot of teams like me. Do you sit there and think at night, oh, I'd love to play for this team or that team? Are you just at the point right now, I want to get drafted. I don't care where it is. Do those nerves settle in as it gets a little bit closer?
Yeah, I think, just a little bit, man. I think the sleeps are getting a little bit shorter, and you're up just walking around the house doing nothing. After workouts, you know, you just, you know, pretty much you catch yourself just laying down and just, you know, either watching ESPN and just trying to take your mind off of it. But I think this is just, you know, a time of my life that I'll never take for granted. I feel so blessed just to be even considered, you know, as being a top prospect in this draft. And I just, you know, just getting closer and closer to it. You know, I know myself as well as my family, we're all really excited and just really just, you know, kind of, you know, wishing the 25th you can just press fast forward and just get to it so we can go ahead and get this, you know, football season started and get my career started. So, yeah, getting a little anxious, but just taking it one day at a time and enjoying it.
Yeah, no, listen, I'm not in your position, but I can only imagine how nerve-wracking it is and exciting at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what's funny, and I didn't mention this to you, but a couple of weeks ago, you know, I've always mentioned here on the air that I'm not a big fan of mock drafts. Personally, I can't stand them, you know, and you have some kids that look at it, some people don't care. I'm one of those people that I don't care, and I know talking to you for a long time, I'm sure you really don't care either. One thing that really got to me is the fact that you have guys, the draft gurus, experts, they call themselves, they come up and they start evaluating defensive backs in the draft, and they say, well, there's no shutdown corner in this year's class. A lot of complimentary guys, a lot of number twos, a lot of number threes. Do you take something like that to heart? I mean, I know I'm talking to you, and I'm sure other corners would feel the same way. But what are your thoughts when you hear people say that? Because it's very difficult to evaluate players based on college when they haven't even gotten to the NFL field, and they're going to be coached up by NFL teams, and let's call it a spade a spade.
Yeah.
Whether you're the first pick or you're Mr. Irrelevant, everyone's going to have things to work on. But when you see something like that or hear it, does that really upset you?
Not really upset me. Not really. But you just have to understand that they probably don't get a chance to get as detailed as these coaches who are getting paid, you know, millions of dollars to, you know, recruit and to scout. You know, they obviously know a lot more about the players as far as people who just do, you know, mock drafts. And that's just understandable just because of their access to videotape and access to, you know, talking to us like we're talking right now. But as far as the shutdown corner, I think this draft and as far as this class of cornerbacks, we have a lot of great corners in this. In this draft, I think we have a lot of great special team players also. You know, I think we have a lot of great players who can also put the ball in their hands. So I think that as far as shutdown, really is what you consider shutdown. If you consider a team not being able to come to your side, a receiver, when he's on the side of this cornerback, what kind of numbers does he put up? Does he even catch the ball? A corner, how many passes has he let be caught on him the whole year? I mean, things like that, those are things that teams look at once they get the film, and that's necessarily what a lot of these mock draft people have the access to. And so I think that is really what you call a shutdown corner, is when he's on one side, what is the production level on the side that he's at? And that's what you can really consider a shutdown. And I think, including myself, I think we have a lot of those in this draft.
Yeah, and you know what, Ash, you did bring up a great point, because this season, 53 tackles, 44 solo, 9 of them assisted, 1 sack, and people will say, oh, well, you know, how come Asher didn't have all the interceptions? And I tell people, I said, listen, when you're a great corner, you know, a perfect example is Nnamdi Asamoah from the Oakland Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to make plays necessarily to be a great corner.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a great corner just by being a threat. Nobody ever threw to your side because they knew how good of a corner you really are.
Exactly, exactly. And that's, I mean, I think a cornerback who, at the end of a game, if he looks at the tape and is getting thrown at, you know, probably 30 times in his direction, he's going to start to think, hold on. You know, I don't think a shutdown corner really gets treated like that. You know, probably once to 5 times a game, you know, a cornerback is okay with that. But if you're getting thrown to that many times, you have to understand offense and how they think. They think, well, my guy's better than your guy, so we're going to come after you. And if that's happening, then you're not really happy and you're not really excited about that because, you probably will get 30 tackles, you know, if you're really good and somebody's thrown in your direction. But your production level will go up. But probably as far as being considered a shutdown and helping your defense, I probably won't be doing that much, but you'll probably get a lot more stats. And not saying stats aren't important, but I think one thing these teams understand when they're evaluating and scouting, they look at the whole picture. And having a guy who can shut down one side of the field as far as passing and running, it's great for the team because now you can worry about 10 other players and figure out what they're going to do besides of, you know, having an extra guy and trying to figure out how we can, you know, execute a game plan.
Yeah, and you make a great point because I was telling this to somebody a long time ago. If you have two corners, one on each side, and one guy gets thrown at 100 times, but the receiver going up against him had 60 catches in the 100 throws, and the other corner's only thrown at 10 times, but a receiver has only one catch in those 10 throws. You have to look at it percentage-wise. You know, you're completing less passes on that side, A,
yeah.
And B, you're throwing at him a lot less because he's that good.
Yeah, and that's understood by a lot of guys who get a chance to look at film and things like that. And guys who are on the team, they know that, you know. And plus offensive people, they know, okay, we're not going to throw to this side. The offensive coordinator, he's going to make sure he makes the right decision and say, okay, we're not going to throw to his side because he's going to make plays and it may hurt us, you know, whether it be a deflection, interception, or he'll make a play somehow. And we can't run certain plays to that side. And that shortens the offense's playbook, you know, sort of say. And so now that's a win on the defense. And so having a player like that, you know, obviously his production as far as numbers goes and picks go and things like that may be low, but as far as a team player and helping the team win, is that production is at an all-time high. So.
Mm-hmm. And joining us on the All Access Sports Line is Asher Allen, defensive back out of Georgia. In a couple weeks, will be a high draft pick to an NFL team near you. Hopefully it's the one near me because they don't get any classier than my man Asher Allen. Now, Asher, I didn't ask you this a long time ago. Did you take that New York Giants 400-question test, the combine?
Oh, man, I think I did. We took so many tests. The questions started to run together, really. But, yeah, I think, I took the test, and it pretty much took the whole time that day.
The whole 8 hours?
Yeah, oh, man, I was just, I think midway I took a snack break. I was like, man. I'm gonna keep going. I think I did all 4 years of college in 8 hours. That's what it felt like. But it was part of the testing process, and you got to do it. So I said, all right, let's go ahead and just get it over with. But yeah, it was something that I'd love for them to give you one of those, but let you do it during the break, man.
Oh, come on, man. Hey, listen, I give you guys credit because there's no way I'm getting to 100 questions. I'll go back to my old college days. You get to question 50 and you're already tired. You Christmas tree, what's left?
I hear you, Speck.
I don't think they're grading it.
Oh, man. I don't know. I just want to – they probably just – if you wanted to quit, that's probably all they wanted to see. But, all the tests we took and things like that, it was – they were good, you know. Some questions were kind of weird and crazy, and some questions were just a normal questionnaire question. So what they do with it, I have no idea, but, it was most definitely an experience.
I'm sure. And, Asher, I just had a couple quick questions to ask you before I let you go because I want to thank you for your time. You are a good friend and a classy individual, and I know you got workouts and you guys are pretty tired. But one thing I wanted to ask you is, what's the funniest thing a receiver, you don't have to name a name, that lined up across from you ever said? It could be any time of your college career. Is there one little incident you'll always remember from a receiver where he started saying something you're like trying not to laugh too hard?
Well, probably I won't say this, but I think that one time what game was that? I won't say what, but anyway, you know, you do some trash talking out there, and this dude hit me with a joke, and I was out there, you know, sometimes you can get heated in trash talk, and you say, I said, man, because he had probably did something. I was like, man, you acting like a little punk out there. And he was like, he said, what? I don't see your mama out here. I said, hold on. Oh, man. He hit me with an old school joke, Spec, and I was like, I haven't heard that in about 30 years. So I was like, man, when he hit me with that, I said, okay. Kind of had me out there laughing, and I went to the sideline, actually, and me and one of my teammates, Prince Miller, we started laughing about it because we haven't heard that joke in so long, and the guys from the team where we played at, they're kind of country and things like that, so they probably just got the joke, so it was kind of funny just hearing it again.
There's an old rule, and I played ball too. Never go with the mama jokes.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
You can't go at mama.
Oh,
never.
Yeah. We turned it up about 100,000. After he said that, I said, okay, let me make sure. I got to do this for mama now. Don't talk about my mama. So I said,
and if I'm taking a guess, final score in that game was Georgia 60, opposition nothing.
Yeah, something like that. So we made sure we turned it up after I heard that.
No, I'm the same way. I'm passionate just like you are, and I played ball not as good of a player as you guys are, but you never go with the mama jokes. So
that's
crossing the line. If that doesn't fire you up, I don't know what does.
Oh, yeah. Got to.
And listen, my friend, the last question I wanted to ask you before I let you get out of here, you made a good point earlier. You know, defensive backs are very valuable. You know, they have to be out on an island shutting down a top receiver. Not only you being a great defensive back, but do you feel your versatility, the fact that you can play receiver, you played returner, do you think, you know, that gives you more of an advantage knowing that teams can look at you and say, wow, Asher Allen can do 3 and 4 different things, so we can help our club out in more ways than one?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I think that's something that when a team looks at a player, he says, you know, can we save roster space, you know what I'm saying? And you could think about that and saying, well, we got a guy here who's a great cornerback, a kickoff returner slash punt returner, and we can also give him some snaps there. So, hold on, we can not worry about drafting a receiver who can that does just kickoff return and punt return. Now we can save a roster space and get another left tackle, you know, and that helps the team out a whole lot. And so bringing that versatility like that, not only is it good for the player, it's also great for the team and allows that team to be able to use up more roster space and also get the most out of a player who can understand that his value to the team is a whole lot, and that can also make him work a lot harder. And, you know, it makes everybody happy once you got a player who's so versatile and can stay on the field the whole time. And it's just really good for both teams.
Yeah, and there you have it, folks. Asher Allen, defensive back out of Georgia. You will hear his name early. And when I say early, I mean you will hear it early. He will be a valuable asset to an NFL team in a few weeks. And, folks, if you have a favorite team and Asher happens to be on your favorite team, you will love nothing more than having him on your team. Asher, you're a good friend. I appreciate the time. And I'm sure I'll talk to you one about the next 12 hours.
Probably spec. Yeah, go hit me up, man.
You got it, my friend. Again, thanks for joining me, my friend, and have a good workout. I'm sure I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Spec Tech. All right, man.
Take care, buddy. You got it.
All right.
There you have it, folks. There's Asher Allen. You will hear his name called early, a good friend and a terrific player, and he will do a great job at the NFL level. And speaking of the NFL, we're going to go... How are you, buddy?
I'm all right. How you doing, Spec?
What's going on, man? Listen, I've been spoken to you, what, about an hour?
Something like that.
and folks, I want to point out that Omar is such a good friend. He's taking a few minutes to join me on his vacation. Omar, you are a good friend.
It's just a tour of colleges, but definitely it's still a vacation. So what's going on, Spec? What are we talking about draft-wise? I heard you got Asher Allen on. That's definitely a pretty good cornerback right there. Does he serve as a returner as well?
He does serve as a returner, but you know in the Miami Dolphin terms, we can't go after returners. We spent the number 9 overall pick, Ted Ginn, a kick returner. We have Ginn.
I disagree with you. I think they are moving on from Ginn as a returner and probably will draft a player like Asher Allen who can serve a dual purpose and be a return guy, because right now you don't have any backup options. Devon Best was a returner, but you didn't necessarily see anything special out of him. And Ted Ginn, I think he's pretty much a wash and as a returner. And it's sort of surprising to me that he has fizzled so much in the return game, because the one thing that you were sure that he was going to be able to do is be a returner in the NFL. But it looks like he's pretty much a better receiver than he is a returner, and that's kind of puzzling. I think Ted Ginn is more of a straight-line speed guy, much like Hayward Bay is, and it doesn't necessarily, to be a good returner, you have to have quickness, and that's something that he's lacking.
Yeah, you know, Omar, and last year we did see flashes. Ginn did have a few big returns. Was it the fact that he was just very inconsistent, or did you think a little part of it played in the fact that Sperano, Ireland, Parcells, they didn't want to use him as much because they were afraid of injury, knowing that their receiving core was very inexperienced and a tad bit depleted at times?
You know what? I think a lot of his energies the past two seasons has been spent learning how to be a receiver, learning how to refine his route running ability, learning how to be a more precise route runner. And I think, you know, that justifiably they paid him a lot of money to be a receiver, not necessarily a returner. And he saves and preserves a lot of his energy for that role. The problem that you have is now that creates a shortage in the return game. And I disagree with you. I mean, I know he had that one big return in the exhibition season, but that was the exhibition season. He hasn't gotten it done in the regular season. And it got to the point where Patrick Cobbs unseated him as the kickoff returner and probably twice as good by my estimations when we got back there.
Do you think, now that you brought up Patrick Cobbs, do you think Patrick Cobbs is the guy they're going to go with next year? I know we know that the Miami Dolphins are all about competition. They're going to bring in body after body after body. They want competition at every single position. Did Patrick Cobbs impress you enough in spurts last year to think that he can be the full-time guy? Or are you about, all right, we need to get somebody that can actually do the job on a consistent basis?
You know, it's funny how Dolphins fans don't really look at running back as a position that they might address in the draft, but I certainly disagree with that.
Omar, you're breaking up, my friend.
But Ricky, you do have two starters.
We just lost Omar. Omar, you still there? I think we just lost Omar Kelly. We'll try and hook back up with Omar. The reception got a little bit bad as we're going on the clock with the Miami Dolphins. And Omar and I were just talking about Ted Ginn being a returner. Patrick Cobbs, is he going to be the returner this year? Dolphins have a lot of needs. Wide receiver position, pass rushers outside of Joey Porter. No player had more sacks than Porter. Porter, 17 sacks. Next highest guy only had 6 sacks for the Miami Dolphins. That's going to be vital for them this year when they play Terrell Owens twice, Randy Moss twice. Tom Brady is coming back. It's going to be a very competitive AFC East. And if they can't put pressure on the quarterback, they're going to be in a little bit of trouble. Let's see if we can reconnect with Omar. Omar, are you there, my friend?
Yes, I'm here. Where did I go?
Yeah, we lost you before. Sorry about that, my friend. The reception got bad.
Problem. Where were we talking? We were talking about the running back situation, and I was addressing the fact that I think running back is an area of need because Ricky Williams and Ronnie Brown are both not only getting up there in years, you know how running backs age like dogs, but they're also going into free agent years. And Ronnie Brown makes $6 million next season, and you know if he's looking for a new contract, he's looking to make more, not necessarily less. So I don't look at it as a situation where he's going to be resigned after or maybe he's going to run for 1,200 yards and get extended, but that's really a complicated issue. And it would be beneficial for the Dolphins to have a draft a young one, maybe in the fourth or fifth round, to possibly groom to be his replacement. And everywhere Parcells is gone, he's always drafted a running back young and got him ready to take over in the fold. So I look at that as a situation where they're probably going to get that addressed.
Now, you made a good point with Ronnie Brown. Ronnie, you know, was the main reason for the Wildcat. He didn't fumble the football. Had a very good season, his first Pro Bowl season, and he did all of it coming off an ACL injury. It takes players to adjust,
yeah,
you know, to have a little bit of that dead leg. And he didn't show that. Now, Ronnie's 27 years old. Do you still think that Ronnie could be a long-term option if they get him cheap and extend him? Is Ronnie a guy, because now with the two-back system in the NFL, you don't see a lot of guys carrying it 30, 35 times every week. Is Ronnie a guy that can still play at a high level for another 3 years?
Well, here's the thing. You know, if you do extend him, you're probably going to extend him only for another 3 years. Running backs, you know, there aren't many running backs in the NFL who are 30 or older who are still turning out yards and being productive. And I look at it as a situation where that's going to be an issue that they really have to look at. I know Ricky Williams is 32. However, Ricky Williams has spent nearly 2, if not 3 years away from the NFL, so he's still got years in those legs. But running back is definitely a position where I think they need to address it either now or they're going to have to address it next year in the draft.
Pass rushers. Joey Porter had an incredible year, and it shows you the difference between coaching. The year under Cam Cameron, five sacks. They didn't know how to put guys in the right position. The 1-15 season, they're running a 3-4, then they're running a 4-3. They're mixing things. They're confusing the heck out of all of their players. Now Bill Parcells comes in with his regime. They stick to 3-4. They get the personnel for it. Joey Porter has 17 sacks. Going to be 33 years old. We know they went out, they got Cameron Wake from the CFL, had two incredible years leading the CFL in sacks. Is he a guy they're banking on? Do you see them getting another young pass rusher? Because Matt Roth, I know, was his first year at outside linebacker, clearly wasn't getting the job done. And when you have to go up against Tom Brady coming back now, you got Terrell Owens, you got Randy Moss, you're going to have to get pressure on the quarterback to make sure that he can't have time to get the ball to those kind of playmakers.
Definitely. I think they have given Cameron Wake a contract as if he was a third rounder, and that's how I pretty much think they're going to view him, as a guy who was selected early in this year's draft, who's going to be a rookie. He's going to need time to adjust into a 3-4 scheme. He's going to need time to adjust to being an outside rusher. And you see what you have. You probably use him on specialty roles like you did Charlie Anderson, where he comes down in third down as a rusher. Matt Roth is probably still going to be used as the first and second down a strong side linebacker to complement Joey. But the Dolphins clearly know they have to get more help for Joey, have to get more help putting pressure on the quarterbacks. That was one of the shortfalls on the team last year, especially in the second half of the season. Even when Joey, I don't think he finished with a sack in the final four games, it was an issue where they weren't getting enough pass rush, and that's something that they will definitely have to address. Now, what puzzles me and I find interesting is they don't have much of an interest. They seem very lukewarm about Jason Taylor. I know he's getting up there in the years, and there's some concerns about how much he has left in the tank, but Jeff Ireland said earlier last week, you know, if they do decide to re-sign Jason Taylor, is he going to be a progress stopper for the young guys that they have? So obviously, if you're going to prevent yourself from getting a four-time Pro Bowler, you have to have some confidence in, one, the ability of Cameron Wake and Matt Roth and Charlie Anderson, and two, you have to have your eyes set on somebody in this draft. And I definitely think they do that.
Now, you made a great point. Jeff Ireland, the general manager, came out and did say that you look at a guy like Jason Taylor, great career, still a great player. He's going to be 35 years old. Is he a progress stopper? Now, you and I spoke about this last week, and you think when a general manager says, if you question if the guy is a potential progress stopper, the answer is no. So that's the way I look at it when it comes to the Jason Taylor saga, situation, whatever you want to call it. I don't think the Miami Dolphins have Jason Taylor in their plans.
No, they don't have Jason Taylor in their plans. However, you know, they're banking on the fact that Roth is going to develop in his second year in a 3-4, and that Cameron Wake is going to be a, you know, a pass-rushing demon that puts a great deal of pressure on the quarterback. Now, is this going to be what reality says they are and what they can contribute? I really don't know. I mean, how much upside? You know what you have in Jason Taylor. On a bad year, he might be good enough for six sacks. Well, that's more than either of the guys that you have in terms of Matt Roth and Cameron Wake contributed last year in the NFL. Matt Roth contributed 5.5 sacks. Cameron Wake, yeah, he was a sack demon in the CFL, but there's a reason he was in the CFL. This guy is, you know, is athletic, has all the potential in the world, but he also happens to be the same guy who got cut from the Giants and didn't even make a practice squad with the Giants when he was a rookie coming out of Penn State. So it's hard to really get a grip on, you know, what they believe in outside of and what their stance is outside of the fact that they probably don't want to play any PR battles with Jason Taylor. So it's an issue where they probably just don't want him on their team, but they don't want to outright come out and write and say, hey, we're not interested in this guy.
No, you're right. And I mean, that's one of the many things that have happened this offseason. How would you evaluate the Dolphins' offseason so far, from re-signing Channing Crowder, re-signing Jeremiah Bell, Vernon Carey, the free agents they've brought in compared to the guys they've lost? How would you evaluate what they've done going in before they head into draft?
You know, I like the plan. I like what's happening because I can see the blueprint. I was well aware of the blueprint before they actually got, you know, building the team. It's a situation where they needed to upgrade at the center position, and so they swapped Samson Satelli for – Jake Grove, and that's definitely an upgrade because Samson Tutelli didn't have the core strength needed to provide much push at the line of scrimmage. They addressed the safety position by re-signing. You know, the biggest moves that they made were re-signing their own guys, Vernon Carey, Channing Crowder, Jeremiah Bell. And so they also addressed the safety by getting younger with Eugene Wilson and swapping him out with Ronaldo Hill. Now, that will hinge on how well of a free safety he is, and I think that's something that's still up in the air. As far as cornerback, they let Andre Goodman go because he was a 30 already, and he was aging, and there wasn't much upside to him. But the situation was, do you have somebody possibly that can replace him? Are they going to bank on Jason Allen being a starter? No. So they went and they picked up Eric Green, and who knows what he has. He's a guy that's got a load of athleticism, doesn't have great ball skills, but then neither does Will Allen, and Will Allen's pretty much developed into a pretty steady and solid corner for the Dolphins.
And that's a good point, too. Will Allen's going into the last year of his contract, 31 years old. Great, was a great blitzer, great tackler. You know, he's been a bit inconsistent over his career in coverage. You and I can both pretty much make the assessment that Will Allen's not the long-term plan. They let Andre Goodman go at 31. You have to think this is going to be the last year for Will Allen. Corner is a serious need for the Dolphins, as you know as well as I do. Terrell Owens twice, Wes Welker and Randy Moss twice. They need to get guys that can cover receivers.
Oh, yeah. I think priority number one, in my opinion, of what the Dolphins' needs are, they need number one, a big physical cornerback. Another version of Jason Allen, probably one that's maybe a little smarter, better ball skills, even though Jason has pretty good ball skills. And they also need a nose tackle. But I think they will address the cornerback position by probably picking up two in this draft, maybe one early, one late, if not three. Maybe one guy that they want to put on the practice squad for a while and stash him. So it's a situation where they definitely will address the cornerback position, picking up maybe a guy like Asher Allen and developing that player.
Now, we know they like big corners, and, you know, people have been going out saying, and you and I were at the combine,
like,
and, you know, they want size, and everyone's saying that there's no shutdown corner in this draft. You know what, Omar, I hate when people say that, and I even asked Asher about that, because it's too early to tell. How do these experts, and I'm using my quotes here, these so-called experts think there's no shutdown corner in the draft? You know, you don't have to be a top 10 pick to be a shutdown corner. And everyone says a bunch of number twos, a bunch of number threes, a bunch of slot guys, no shutdown corner. I don't really necessarily believe that because the NFL scouts and these teams know what they like and how they can develop a guy.
You know, you're right. It's too early to sit here and say there are no shutdown corners. But what the issue is, here's the thing. Here's how they evaluate. Are there any five-tool cornerbacks in this draft? Just like baseball, are there any guys who have the five tools that you need in your tool belt to be an elite cornerback? No, there's guys who maybe have four, like Malcolm Jenkins and Vontae Davis, but they're missing something like speed for Malcolm Jenkins or character for Vontae Davis. Or like a guy like Alfonso Smith. If this guy was 3 inches taller, he'd have $20 million in his bank right now because he's got elite ball skills. He's got athletic ability. He's a tough, hard-nosed kid. He's got good character. He's a four-year starter. The problem is he's only 5'8". How in the world could you dare put him up against a Terrell Owens in the AFC East? So it's a situation where there are a lot of talented cornerbacks, and I think that the cornerbacks are selected between two and four. You know, there are maybe a dozen of them who might turn out to be that shutdown corner, like Samuels was for New England and now it's for the Patriots, Asante Samuels. There might be 12 of those. There might be even, if there are even five, that's a good year for cornerbacks. The problem is you don't know what you have until the guys get there and you develop and see what they have, the potential that they have.
Yeah.
But not a lot of teams are willing to invest a first-round pick in them.
No, I agree. And, Omar, like I said, I know you're on vacation. A couple more quick questions for you. Wide receiver. Dolphins have Ginn, Devon Betts, Greg Camarillo coming back from the injury. They're really high on Brandon London, who's a big receiver. Do they take a receiver? How early do they take a receiver?
I think they will take a receiver, if not two, but I think it'll be a situation where they take a receiver not in necessarily the first day, maybe the second of the second picks at the earliest. I mean, this draft is going to be pretty much it's got a decent amount of top tier receivers, and then the second batch, you know, you rate players in their tiers, elite top one, tier one. This draft is deep in tier two, just like cornerbacks. This draft is very deep in tier two cornerbacks. Those are guys you use your second through fourth or fifth round picks for, and you throw a couple against the wall, you see which ones stick. And I think that they're going to approach this draft with that philosophy: throw a couple of these cornerbacks against the wall, throw a couple of these wide receivers against the wall, see which one sticks, invest in that player and develop them. And that's the situation. They're going to draft in bulk, I think, in both positions.
Yeah. No, and you know, the Dolphins are picking 25th overall first round, two selections in round two, one from Washington for the Jason Taylor trade. Those three early picks, I was making assessments saying that it has to be in whatever order, a corner, a defensive tackle, and a pass rusher. I was thinking they can get a wide receiver in the early rounds in round three, but if, you know, you look at those first four picks, and I'm saying defensive tackle, corner, wide receiver, pass rusher. All four of those positions, their first four picks in the draft. Would you think otherwise?
No, I definitely think you've hit on the four key positions to address. Maybe they throw in a tackle or a center just to get one of the elite players in this draft. Maybe you say, hey, we think one of these centers could be a good quality backup guard, and an eventual replacement for Jake Grove, or you pick up a third tackle just to have some insurance against an injury to Jake Long or Verdun Carey. But you know, of the four positions, I think you've hit the four most critical ones, and I do believe the Dolphins will address all of those early in the first day.
And last question for you, my friend. Can we stop with the Chad Pennington, Chad Henne talk? I mean, I know Henne is traveling with some of the guys, and he's throwing to all these receivers and whatever games the regime is playing. Pennington had an incredible year last year with not the sexiest of weapons. Now they're all another year under the system. We know Henne is the future. Do you think there's any chance that Chad Henne will start this year unless Pennington completely bombs out of the team, just starts
absolutely
on a very cold streak?
Absolutely, and here's a scenario I give you. It's the season. Dolphins are halfway through the season. They are, let's say, 4-4. The Patriots are 7-1, making probably a playoff push. I think at some point during the season, be week 10, maybe week 11, you say it's time to turn over, hand the keys over to our future. If you know you're out of the playoff push at an early state, maybe you played the Patriots two games, they've got a two-game lead on you, and you see what you have. I mean, really, it's a situation where I think the Dolphins will be enticed and excited about seeing what they have this season, and they know Chad Henne is the future. They know they're going into 2010 with the belief that he's going to be the starter, and there's no reason that you shouldn't invest in it in that player if you're not making a playoff push.
So you think it's a strong possibility that Henne could take over middle of the year, and that could be the end of Pennington. Pennington then a backup. Does he go to another team in the future as a starter? You think he's at a point where he is what he is, and that's the end of the story with Chad Pennington?
If they aren't battling for the AFC East crown, I think it's inevitable. I think it will happen. And you know, I would say it's probably even a greater chance than 50% chance that Chad Henne will start at least one game this season, either through injury, where Chad Pennington's never played back-to-back seasons without suffering a serious injury, or through the record not being in contention for an AFC East crown, and they just want to see what the young guys got.
Yeah, then there you have it. Omar Kelly, folks, from the South Florida Sun Sentinel, a good friend because he only calls me when he's on vacation to help out with a radio show. You can check out his terrific work on sunsentinel.com, or you can always get it at your doorstep. Omar, enjoy your vacation, your so-called vacation. Enjoy the time with the family. What colleges are you looking at really fast?
FSU, UF, and Florida A&M, and UCF. Just doing a Florida tour here.
Go to UCF.
Why?
UCF, it's a Brian Spector alma mater.
Oh, okay. It's a UCF special. All right.
Omar, my best to the family. I'm sure I'll talk to you in the next couple of days. Really appreciate the time, my friend.
All right, Spec. Talk to you later.
You got it, my friend. There you have it, folks. Omar Kelly from the South Florida Sun Sentinel joining us here on the All Access Sports Line. And we were on the clock with the Miami Dolphins. If you're a Dolphin fan, what do you think? Chad Henne could be the starter. Middle of the season, if the Dolphins struggle. They went 11-5 last year, didn't play the toughest of schedules. Now, granted, you have to play who's in front of you. You have to play who's on your schedule. I don't give a crap what their record was, where they had to play five or six teams that were 2-14. Or listen, everybody in the AFC East last year had to play the NFC West. NFC West is a crappy division. This year, everybody in the AFC East has to play everybody in the NFC South. Tampa Bay, New Orleans, Atlanta, Carolina. No cakewalk for any team in the AFC East. And you can say that about the teams in the NFC North. When you see the Miami Dolphins, New England Patriots, the New York Jets, the Buffalo Bills on your schedule, not easy. You can say whatever you want about the Bills. You still got to play Terrell Owens and Lee Evans, arguably one of the best tandems in the NFL. Tom Brady's coming back. You know how good the Patriots are going to be with Belichick. Dolphins with Bill Parcells, Ireland, Sperano and company. They won the division last year. You can say whatever you want. They still won the division. New York Jets, I know they don't have a quarterback. Rex Ryan's been a very successful defensive coordinator. The Jets have a lot of talent. So there's a lot of parity in the league. It's not going to be easy. Any given Sunday, you can win one week to the best team. You can lose the crappiest of teams. That's the way the cookie crumbles. So it'll be very interesting. Everyone says, oh, Matt Ryan's unbelievable. Joe Flacco, unbelievable. Vince Young was unbelievable, too, in his rookie year, and he took a step back. Teams were able to figure him out. I'm not saying that's going to happen to Matt Ryan or Joe Flacco, but there's adjustment periods. Teams know how to prepare for you. Chad Henne, oh, he was only the 59th pick. How is he not starting over Pennington? Chad Henne is getting schooling that nobody else is getting. Chad Pennington is a Marshall grad. He's one of the smartest quarterbacks out there. He's preparing this kid how to read every formation, when a corner's blitzing. How do you know if he's cheating, which direction he's going to go? That's schooling, folks, that nobody is getting. Ask Aaron Rodgers what it was like learning under Brett Favre. It's the same thing. Dan Marino didn't come out and start week one when he was a rookie. Ben Roethlisberger did. He's one of those rare cases. He took off. He's won two Super Bowls since. Every team is different. That was Omar Kelly from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. We went on the clock with the Miami Dolphins. If you're a Dolphin, what are your thoughts? What do you want to see your team do in the draft, folks? We're 2.5 weeks away. Are you excited? Are you jacked up? I'm excited. I'm pumped up. I'm doing everything except looking at mock drafts. Spoke to a good friend, Todd McShay. Every time you see Todd McShay do a mock draft on ESPN, he can't stand it. Todd hates mock drafts. In your contract, you have to do it. Mock drafts are just for people that are bored, that have nothing to do with their time. Hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Asher Allen. You'll hear his name called early in a few weeks. It was great to have Asher Allen, the cornerback from Georgia, on the show, and Omar Kelly from the South Florida Sun Sentinel on the show. Thursday, we'll be back from 5 to 6. Instead of 6 to 7, we're on 5 to 6 on Thursday. We'll go on the clock with the Baltimore Ravens. We'll have a special guest on Thursday, more guests, as a matter of fact, on Thursday. As we're hoping, Joe Flacco, quarterback from the Baltimore Ravens, will be joining us on Thursday. Hoping to have Joe on Thursday about 5:15 join us on the program. We got some other special guests. As we get closer to the NFL draft, be interesting to see what else happens around the NFL the next couple of days. Maybe Al Davis will sign Jeff George. Get a third quarterback. I hear he's eligible for his AARP card. Michael Vick is just a bonehead. You're not making $10 million. But, folks, again, we'll be back Thursday on the NFL Spectacular on B-Spec. Brian Spector here on the All Access Football Network. Want to thank my guest again, Asher Allen, defensive back out of Georgia. You'll hear his name called early in the draft. I want to thank Omar Kelly from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. We went on the clock with the Miami Dolphins. I want to thank all of you that were listening, tuning in the show. Appreciate all your support. We will be back Thursday from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All of you folks, have a good night. Have a good rest of the week. And we'll see you Thursday here on the NFL Spectacular. I'm B-Spec, Brian Spector. Have a good one.